This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Say the words folk music and tunes by Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, even the Kingston Trio and Peter, Paul, and Mary come to mind. But folk predates Woody Guthrie and has continued beyond those folk stalwarts of the early 1960s. And like everything else, folk music has changed. What we classify as folk today seems to be pushing the envelope of the category. So we've even given that category some new names to contain those new sounds. But at the base of all this music, no matter what you call it, are the stories being told through the songs. So the question becomes, do labels really matter? And since the music industry tends to like labels as a kind of signpost to direct consumers, how do you classify some of the music being made by new artists who consider themselves folk artists or whose music might appeal to those who gravitate toward that genre? We're going to talk about that this hour with Jeff Hain. He has been the music editor at Creative Loafing Charlotte for the last 7 years. He attends about 100 concerts a year, much to the dismay of his wife and their newborn child, and has interviewed countless musicians from all genres. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. We're also joined by two singer-songwriter musicians. David Childers is both a poet and a songwriter, and a lawyer, as a matter of fact. Much of his work has been classified as Americana, but he has written and recorded everything from that to traditional folk and gospel. Recently joined forces with his son Robert and the Avett brothers Bob Crawford to form the Overmountain Men. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Mike.
Nice to see you again. And we've also invited Rob Nance to join us. Rob writes songs that echo the traditions of Southern and contemporary folk music to create a unique brand of roots rock. His approach plays right into our hands as we talk about the diversity of folk music today. Nice to have you with us as well.
Thanks. Good morning.
You're up in Durham.
Up in Durham.
You play a lot up there in Durham?
All the time.
Where can people see you up in Durham?
Anywhere in town, Chapel Hill, Raleigh. I'm around the whole triangle as much as I can.
Well, thank you for being here this morning. Appreciate
it. For having me.
So let's start with the definition of traditional folk music and then move on to what that definition might mean today. What has traditionally been considered folk? How would you define that? I'm not sure who to ask that question of. Jeff,
I think it depends. Everyone has a different definition these days. I think in a traditional sense, it was usually a singer-songwriter, acoustic guitar kind of sense. That's what people think of, Bob Dylan, Pete Seeger, that kind of thing. Storytelling style of lyrics, I guess. And it's just kind of evolved from there, and it seems to be the easiest banner to put people under there's an acoustic instrument, they're kind of a storytelling singer, just call them folk.
Yesterday, which was lampooned today in the newspaper, the Beatles yesterday, was a voice and a guitar, wasn't it? Maybe some strings thrown in there toward the end.
Right.
But that's not folk music.
No. So that's where it became, what's the easiest thing to sell this as? How can we file our records in the record store?
How do you guys think of yourselves, David?
Well, I don't think of myself as being a traditional folk music musician at all. I'm certainly influenced by all that. I grew up listening to that. When you're looking for a definition, I think you go way back, before things were recorded, and even back to Homer and that kind of tradition of the Odyssey and the Iliad, where you had rhyme schemes and meter to preserve these stories that, even a lot, probably parts of the Bible too. I think when people started, like when Alan Lomax went out and started recording, you started getting it on in a form.
He was the guy from the Smithsonian
Brooks
Projects Administration who
went out. Back in the 20s and 30s, did a lot of field recording. But, it is music of the people. It's music that's that I've always felt like it formed a crucial part of people's culture, their day-to-day culture. Nowadays, you may have it coming off the radio. I mean, there's parts of town, we're a very diverse culture here in Charlotte. A guy like me can go back to Arthur Smith and look at seeing those guys and hearing them on. But, I'm sure there's Hispanic music in communities. There's Jamaican music.
Could the argument be made that rap
is folk music? Sure, of course. Very much so.
Okay. How do you think of yourself, Rob?
I would think of myself as someone, probably like David, who borrows heavily from folk traditions. like you were saying, kind of searching for a definition of it. I was kind of thinking about that on the way down here, and the best thing I could come up with was that folk music is kind of a reflection of someone's situation, whether it's their social situation, political, economic, that kind of thing. So in that sense, anything could be folk, whether it's, you know, the immigrants who brought their music over from somewhere all the way up to hip-hop that came out of communities and stuff like that. Anything that's reflective of someone's current situation, I think, can be classified as folk music.
Yeah, the early folk musicians that you talked about with Alan Lomax recording them probably did not think of themselves as being folk musicians. They just played music and sang and told stories about their daily lives through the music that they chose to write and sing. Is that what makes this music attractive to a lot of people? Just the fact that it's a simple message that they can relate to because they're living that story themselves, and that it's easier to sing than some other song, and easier to play than some other pieces.
And easier on the ears than some other songs. You know, I think it depends too. We're already getting into that area too with, you know, talking about, you know, every country has their traditional folk songs, but then is that, you know, a portion of folk music, is that, you know, which falls under, is folk music under this traditional style, is traditional under folk umbrella? Or
back in the 60s, when folk music seemed to have its zenith, at least in terms of being played a lot on the radio and headlining acts playing at college campuses like Peter Paul and Mary, like Pete Seeger, like all these names were in my head 10 seconds ago. Now,
yeah.
Now they're gone. The Kingston Trio, the New Christy Minstrels, or the Old Christy Minstrels, whoever they were. Were they real folk music, or was that some kind of a glossy, let's polish this rough hewn edge, this rough stone, and make it very
palpable
to the masses?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's what, and I'm not putting those guys down. I mean, I still play Greenback Dollar that Kingston Trio did, and I love listening to that. But when you get somebody like Pete Seeger, you know, he was a lot more in the traditional form of it. But, yeah, I mean, it's the music industry picks up. Anything they see that's popular or unique, they get a hold of it, and they take control of it, and they blow it up, and they dilute it over time. That's what happens.
I was reading a lot about folk music and definitions of folk music yesterday, and it used to be folk music used to refer to the music of white people of European ancestry. And then it expanded, according to the definition I read, to incorporate other song styles like the blues, and it became associated with other cultural experiences. So then it became known as roots music. Is roots music the same as folk music, Rob? Or is that an unfair question to ask you?
It's an interesting question for sure. I mean, I think when you start talking about roots, you start talking about what started something. Whereas folk music, you know, I think maybe can be a more fluid definition of a type of music. When you start talking about roots, you start talking about where did something come from. And I think roots music, you know, at its beginning probably likely was folk music, but whether or not they're the same thing, you know, I think that's anybody's interpretation.
And going back to the 60s, when people like, I guess Arlo Guthrie to a certain degree, Pete Seeger, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, they were dealing with social unrest in their songs. They were talking about, they were trying to change our country from the 50s to the 60s and go after the war in Vietnam, etc. Is that what made that music so popular? The fact that they were tapping into a set of youth opinions, and they were going after that youthful audience, and they galvanized that audience, and vice versa. Is that what was going on there?
I think it's a matter of it's the most relatable and accessible format to get it out. And I think there's also in a traditional sense of folk music being, I don't know, in my mind I always think instruments you don't have to plug in that sense. You can go to a protest with your acoustic guitar and sing in front of a crowd, and you don't need to worry about all that mess to get your message across, mm-hmm. And it was easier that way in a decade of protests. But
electrified rock and roll was really just coming into being back then. I mean, really, when you think about it, maybe 8 years into it in the 1960s, because before that, mm-hmm. It was pretty much acoustic everything.
Right.
I think it was a little older than that. I mean, probably go back to the 40s, and a lot of that was in blues music. But those protest songs, I was there. I mean, I was a teenager, you know, back during the 60s, and that stuff really spoke to me, and it really affected me. Of course, I couldn't go, you know, Mount Holly, Bob Dylan wasn't going to come there. The idea that he would even come to Charlotte was amazing. But, you know, we had the records, and, you know, there was groups of us that would pass them around and get educated.
Do you think that the protest music caused a lot of people to look deeper into just the folk music in general that maybe wasn't protest music?
Yeah, it opened up doors, just like any form of music that you start getting into and exploring. But, you know, talking about roots, I think that is folk music. But I read something years ago, George Thorogood said, George Thorogood and the Destroyers, and because he was doing a lot of old things like Hank Williams, Chuck Berry. He said, well, it won't be long before Memphis by Chuck Berry will be traditional. That's the way it'll be. And so those kind of songs, you know, have become part of our folk music now. They're songs everybody knows. They have a commonality to them that expands through the whole culture.
So would you put Roy Orbison's Pretty Woman, which you hear all the time still, after 40, 50 years, would you call that folk music now?
You know, if some dude's standing there playing it and singing it for a bunch of people and they're having a good time, yeah.
Okay.
To me, it's pretty loose, but that's
that, well, that leads to, okay.
Yeah. I was going to say, just going back to the other thing, too, about folk music in the 50s, 60s, and it being acoustic in that format and electric, well, it was accessible, but it was also the most common form of music. I think back to recent times when the Occupy movement was happening and the protest songs that came out of that, and they were coming out of hip-hop and rock and other genres, because that's what's more accessible to the youth and people in general through pop music or whatever.
Well, so because if the definition is that the folk music, the topics covered are topics that people experience in their lives, it's the story of their lives. I mean, isn't all music the story of somebody's life? Isn't every song telling some sort of a story that almost all of us can relate to, which is what makes that song a hit or not?
Not if you listen to some of Top 40 these days. there's some lyrically lacking music out there.
I've been away from the Top 40 for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think some things would tend to touch on specific points. Well, I mean, it can still be folk music. I think it all comes down to, you know, how it gets shared and that sort of thing. So, like, talking about Roy Orbison, you know, when it came out, I doubt anyone would say it's folk music. But, you know, now if, you know, you're sitting around at a jam circle and somebody plays a Roy Orbison song, and then, you know, you pass it along to someone else, and all of a sudden it's a folk song, where maybe that's what wasn't its original intention was to make some sort of broader comment, but maybe now it does.
But and it's become part of our culture.
Right. I mean,
people of all generations seem to know that song. And that leads me to the question about the expansion of what is included in the category of folk music, under the umbrella of folk music. Why? How did that happen?
In more recent times, I think it just becomes an easier to describe something. But everything has become folk rock or folk pop or folk something else. Or it's just that definition of folk has become much broader.
And who puts that definition on? The labels or the musicians themselves?
Everybody, labels, musicians, critics, whatever will help you describe your music that it might get into the hands of somebody.
We have to take a break. We're going to come back with more of this discussion and hear some of these gentlemen's music, David Childers and Rob Nance, and we'll do that when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Beckler Museum of Modern Art annual gala celebrating the artistry of the Beckler Building and its architect, Mario Botta. Cocktails, hors d'oeuvres, music, and more, March 28th, 7 p.m. Tickets and details at Beckler.org. Well, several years ago, Charlotte-Mecklenburg police began investigating ways to reduce the influence of gangs. They explored ways to merge several youth involvement groups in hopes that this more cohesive organization would better engage at-risk kids. And they've had some success with that. They call it the Youth Engagement Unit. We'll talk about how that success has come about and also explore a change in the character of crime in the Hidden Valley neighborhood. They've come back from the brink, evidently, and reduced juvenile crime. We'll talk about that tomorrow at 9.
Few American cities are equipped for really high-speed internet. Many others want it.
It's like jealousy, visceral jealousy of another city.
Do they really need super high-speed fiber optic connections?
The rush to fiber may be foolhardy.
Cities take broadband into their own hands. Today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR News source.
It's Charlotte Talks, unlistener-funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about folk music and the progression of it through the years with Jeff Hain, who's the music editor of Creative Loafing. David Childers is a singer-songwriter whose latest album is Serpents of Reformation. Rob Nance from the Durham area is with us. He's a singer-songwriter. His latest EP is called Sycamore. His latest album is Lost Souls and Locked Doors. So what is causing this blending, this folk rock, folk this, folk that? I mean, is it simply the natural progression of artists who are beginning to change what they do over time, because you don't want to get stuck in one place forever, and you begin to explore other areas of music? I know you've done that a lot, David. Or is it because of the decline in the power of the big labels to pigeonhole artists because they're losing their power over music, period?
I think there's a bit of that with the labels and the decline of pigeonholing artists, and I think part of that is just so many artists are influenced by so many different styles of music. There's so much out there. When if you go back years, you didn't have that many different genres to listen to or be influenced by. I mean, there was the traditional ones, but these days you have rock artists who are influenced as much by jazz and blues as they are by hip-hop and pop music.
But do you think traditional folk musicians like Pete Seeger or even Peter Paul and Mary, for that matter, felt that they could not do certain music because they had to stick in the lane? They had to stay in the lane.
I'm sure labels push that as much as they could.
I would imagine that they felt that way.
Well, I think a guy like Pete Seeger, I regard as a very principled man, actually felt that there was a certain purity that he had to preserve. You know, the famous incident of him going nuts when Dylan came out in Newport. You know, we can all criticize him, but, you know, he was a guy, you know, he went to prison for things he believed in. So grabbing an axe and trying to chop the electrical cord to stop his, that's nothing to a dude like that. You know, I think he really wanted to preserve something, rightly or wrong.
Yeah.
That was where he was
coming
from.
What about purists? Because there are purists of every genre. No matter what kind of music you make, there are people who say, this is what it is, don't go outside the lines, and if you do, I'm done with you. How do purists, folk music purists, feel about this blending, this blurring of the lines?
I think there's a big push for preservation of certain things. I went to school up at Appalachian State, and I know there's a big community up there with the old time scene. You know, people get very strict about it, and sometimes, you know, it would get on my nerves. You know, if you're trying to play with them, it seems like there's all these rules that you kind of have to abide by. And I mean, I certainly appreciate the preservation aspect of it, but I'm glad David mentioned Alan Lomax before. You know, sometimes it could be as simple as the version they're going off of is just whoever he happened to record that day, and there's, you know, multiple versions of it. So in terms of purists, I think from a preservation standpoint, it's good for the music, but as long as they don't, you know, as long as we don't try to really lock something down and not let it ever breathe, you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, country music went through the same thing. I mean, the traditional country artists fought electric guitars and all this amplification for a very, very long time and ultimately lost the battle. I mean, that's country music is completely different from what Hank Williams sang.
Right. I interviewed an artist a couple weeks ago, a guy named Charlie Starr, who's the singer of a band, Blackberry Smoke, who gets labeled as country. They were Southern music. They don't even want to put Southern rock or anything like that. And he said, go up to a lot of country artists today and ask them to sing a Hank Williams song and see if they could do it. They probably can't. You know, are they really singing country?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of genres are doing that. You have traditionalists who want to see it stay as it always has been through its roots, and you have other people who just, it's based on perspective. If you're coming from a certain area and you think, well, this is folk to me, as opposed to folk in the traditional sense.
Is bluegrass folk?
Yeah.
Consider it that. Yeah.
Okay, so is country folk?
Well, what is country? I mean, what you got coming out is another thing.
I don't mean today.
But I don't think what's coming out of Nashville, I don't consider it country music at all. I hear some things that have tendencies, but mostly it's pop music. It's like soft rock kind of music. At the same time, I think those lyrics, people relate to that.
I want to hear something from you, Rob. I'm going to start with a song from your first, I think it's your first set of recordings. Is Watauga's on the...
First EP I did.
The Sycamore EP?
No, that was on the very first EP I put out, even before Lost Souls and Locked Doors, called Wake Up and Smile.
Okay. Well, let's listen to a bit of Rob Nance and Watauga.
Lay you down, rest yourself, my son, get some sleep. Tomorrow's coming quickly, and by then we'll have to leave. So run and get your suitcase, leave a note for all your friends. The time that's left and the luck you had are wearing low and thin. Mom and me had a home, we built it in the mud, to find a place where we could raise you and your brother up. Until the money ran out and bills stacked like an anvil on my chest, and now nothing but the lottery or the good Lord can pay my debts. I've been trying to get some air up here, sometimes get so thin, and these locking doors don't bother me no more. So come on and come on in.
Now, you wrote this song, and it's obviously about a father and son and a marriage gone bad, and I couldn't figure out from the lyrics whether he goes to prison or not, but he certainly has his travails.
Yeah.
You're in your 20s. Uh-huh. Where did that song come from?
I don't know. I mean, kind of based, like, piecing together some conversations I had with various people. And just some of them even humorous conversations. The song obviously didn't turn out that way.
So do you think this is how would you describe this song in terms of what we've been talking about this morning?
I think one thing I was definitely looking to do in this song was kind of paint a picture of the current state of someone's life. You know, obviously it's in a fictional way, but kind of drawing on just kind of the current environment of where people are in their life, people having tough times, things like that, and also just kind of exploring like the storytelling side of things. This was one of the first songs I ever finished, so I mean it's an imperfect song.
And you end it, I don't think it's imperfect, you end it with advice from the father to his son, essentially to live a straight life, otherwise you'll end up early in a Watauga grave,
right?
Essentially, that's pretty pretty heavy stuff going on. But you've kept this song very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Very listenable. Mm-hmm. Really, I mean, you hear the words, and that's the secret, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that was really important to me, my first set of recordings, to have the songs stand on their own. You know, later on, in other recordings, I added, you know, other instrumentation and things like that. But, yeah, it was really important for me the first time I released songs that it be just the songs as much as possible.
And obviously it's just you and your guitar. I mean, what would you do? Would you be against somebody expanding this and putting orchestration behind it? I mean, would that ruin the flavor of it?
On principle, no. But with this particular set of recordings, the first ones that I did, I don't think I could ever really stand to see anyone altering them. I mean, you know, if they did, I wouldn't be mad.
Well, if
I
give you a bunch of money.
Yeah. we find out what my price would be real
exactly
quick.
Right. So you said it's an imperfect song. Why?
I mean, I would never say that anything I had written would be perfect, but I don't know. It's just, like I said, it was just me exploring a story that I was trying to create. So, I mean, it is what it is. It's, you know.
Now, a lot of your music, David, has been classified under this Americana label.
Yeah.
What is that?
I have no idea. I'll tell you the truth. It was when that came along, when I came aware of that in the 70s, it was a marketing label. It was a way to get radio play. And I just shamelessly rode the horse, to get some attention. It worked to a certain degree.
Does it mean anything at all to somebody?
There's people in Nashville it means a lot to, because that's where all the old stars, you know, who lost their big deals and started waning, that's where they went to to find some stability. I call it Ford Americana.
Because
you got all these old guys in there.
We did a program on Americana. I'm not sure that you were on the program or not, Jeff, at the time, but we did a show about Americana music and about this festival that goes on to select the cream of the crop in the genre every year. And it seemed among those people to be very meaningful, a label.
It is, and I think, again, I've interviewed, dozens and dozens of musicians, and I don't think there's ever been one that said, yes, I am this kind of music or that kind of music. They all hate labels.
They all hate.
For the most part, I would say 99% of musicians hate labels. They don't want to be pigeonholed in that way. Now, it comes from, labels who are trying to sell it. It comes from people like me or critics who are trying to, if I'm trying to get David's music out and I want people to listen to it, if I throw words out like Americana, folk, and things like that, they might be, you're trying to throw that carrot out to somebody who might go, well, I have folk and Americana
music. Let me try this out.
Let me give it a listen and things like that. Now, if you tell David, well, you're playing folk music, he said, no, I'm not. I'm not, this isn't traditional folk. But it helps get that music out there. If you're trying to sell it to somebody, what might they be interested in?
But if you sell David as an Americana artist or a folk artist, or you sell Rob the same way, and then suddenly you are inspired to write something and sing something that doesn't fit into that category, do you feel any pressure not to record it, not to perform it, because you're sitting in front of people who came to hear you do this folk thing? And suddenly you've written this, Christina Aguilera song that you just happen to like.
I do that a lot.
Do you feel reluctant to record or perform it?
So far, I haven't run into that.
Have you written a song that takes you outside the category?
The last song I wrote for Christina Aguilera didn't turn out well. I think that was probably the same way. You tell somebody about your music or your playing, and a lot of times the first question you get is, well, what kind of music is it?
Yeah.
And I it's the same way, like he was saying, like, you don't want to be pigeonholed, so you go through this whole thing. It's like kind of Americana folk or whatever, but I always tell people, as long as they listen, it's fine.
Because I know you don't feel any compunction about changing styles, because you change it all the time.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's just I do what I want to do. I'm not with a big label or anything.
And you worked, David, with Jim Avett on some gospel shows a couple of years ago and recorded some classic gospel tunes, and we're going to play one right now.
Jericho, and the walls come tumbling down. fought the battle of Jericho, and the walls come tumbling down, and the walls come tumbling down, and the walls come tumbling down.
So here you venture off, David Childers, into gospel, and it sounds nothing like gospel.
I don't know. I was rather moved.
What attracted you to gospel music?
Well, I grew up with it, and it was just really the first music I ever sang was in church, like a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I've had a spiritual awakening of my own, which has made it more meaningful. But it was a pleasure to work with Jim, who I knew that song from way back, but he opened me up to so many others that he knows. He knows a ton of them,
mm-hmm,
and knows how to play them. And, you know, we were just lucky enough to get that recorded. And but, I, you know, it's as much it has a gospel feel to it, I think.
Is that from
when we play it, people dance. I mean, it's pretty crazy. So, yeah, people go nuts when we play that song live.
So is that from the Serpents of Reformation?
Yeah, that's one of the cuts on there.
This is kind of this whole album is kind of an exploration of gospel on your part. Is that what it is, an exploration, or is it something more than
I
that?
Think, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely it's a spiritual exploration. And it wasn't intended to be that. I just wanted to build up, do an album that focused on the beats, because there's a lot of real rhythmic things going on. And it turned into with a bunch of pagans and atheists working with me, you know, inadvertently became this spiritual kind of gospel record. That
did you convert anybody?
I don't know, but, you know, the Lord knows how to use a sinner, and that's what happened in this, including me.
So you're the music critic. David Childers, this Americana artist, comes out with his album, which is all gospel or based mm-hmm on gospel music. What do you tell your readers?
Well, that's the kind of thing I'm thinking as you're listening to that music, that you could label it as folk gospel. You could probably throw a little bluegrass on there,
mm-hmm,
but that's why somebody like me or somebody like David describing his music, you know, a label might say, well, this is folk gospel and leave it at that and try to sell it that way. Now, if David was probably talking about himself or if I was talking about David, I would say, well, there's this folk style music that has gospel and fused lyrics and, you know, there are bluegrass hints in the music, but then go on from that and talk about the instruments that are used. It sounds like mandolin in there and stand-up bass and some things like that. And, you know, to give people a broader idea of what exactly it sounds like instead of just saying, oh, it's some gospel and folk.
But that wasn't just me. Neil Harper and Robert Childers and a bunch of other people.
We'll hear some more music and talk some more about this blending of the genres in Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mr. Rogers Windows, a local family-owned business since 1986, offering renewal by Anderson replacement windows and entry door systems installed by trained craftsmen. Product details at MrRogersWindows.com. Well, Russians are reportedly demanding that Ukrainian forces in Crimea surrender soon or face armed assault. Meanwhile, the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is off to Ukraine's capital to meet with the country's embattled government. Guest host Tom Jelton from NPR and his guests talk about the latest on the situation and how the United States and the European Union will respond. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you have something to add to our program, well, now's your chance. And the best way to get to us is at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
All right, so here's a question. After all the debate and the Supreme Court and the controversy, why Obamacare?
Well, as we know, 10% of healthcare of people in America consume 67% of all healthcare dollars.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the Affordable Care Act after the fact. Next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with David Childers, singer-songwriter, and has appeared with the Over Mountain Men, which is one of his groups throughout the long and storied career that he's had. Rob Nance, also a singer-songwriter out of Durham. His latest album is Lost Souls and Locked Doors, right? And Jeff Hain is the music critic for Creative Loafing. If you don't compartmentalize yourself as an artist, if you don't think of yourself and try to stick to folk or rock or calypso, whatever it may be, do you stand a chance of reaching a wider audience? Because you don't think of yourself as having to appeal to just this one group. You can do a folk song and turn around and do something else next. Or do you stand the chance of getting lost in the crowd because people don't know who you are or what you are?
Or you stand the chance of alienating your fan base that
liked
your first album, but then you lost them on the next one.
I always like to think of it in terms of albums. You know, an album is a complete project. And personally, I don't mind if an artist I like makes a shift from album to album. But I think you do have to consider consistency, or at least I like to, when putting together an album project, because I think you would run the risk of alienating people if you jump around too much.
And in today's world, where people are not really physically buying CDs or LPs, they're just really buying what they hear that they like. They're buying singles again, essentially. Mm-hmm. Does it really matter about an album?
It does in my book. I think it's kind of maybe becoming like a niche market a little bit in some ways, especially vinyl. But I still think there's people who really value an album is a full project, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, they want to have something they can hold, and they want to hear a progression.
See, I do. I want to hear something that I can hold in my hand and put on the shelf, and nobody does that anymore. Talk to me about that, Jeff, because people go to iTunes, and they buy what they want, and sometimes they maybe download the whole album, but it lives on a hard drive someplace, not as a single unit.
I almost think it's somewhat generational, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up with albums and CDs, and I wanted to read that book. And even today, if I'm reviewing something or somebody sends it to me, send me the liner notes. I want to know who else is playing. Where if David sends me that song that we were listening to earlier, and I said, well, here's the instrumentation and whatever, but I should know that Neil Harper's playing on it, and Robert's playing on it, and Jim's playing on it, and who all these other musicians are, because that's bringing other influence and styles into the music.
Do you think there's a trend going back in that direction?
I think a little bit with not traditionalists, but these people who are collecting vinyl, I think that's bringing some of that back.
So the question becomes, in this digital world, and we can't fight it, it's here to stay, and in this digital world where everything has changed, how is that affecting the blending of stuff? Because we're not going and buying 12 songs on an LP or 15 songs on a CD anymore. We hear Rob in a club and think, I'm going to look online and see if I can find that song, download it, and put it on my iPod or on my phone. Or he maybe pops up on Pandora because I have described the kind of music that I want to them, and they know that he fits the algorithm. How is that changing?
I mean, I think it's just changed a little bit in the purchasing process, because when I look back to when I was a kid, I used to take a cassette and try to tape songs off the radio that were playing and create my own little mixtape, which is kind of what happens today when people are buying these individual songs from iTunes. But if it's a song I really love, I was going to go out and find that band's album because I wanted to hear more of it. You know, if that's my favorite song or something, I want to hear more of it, or hopefully more people are going out to see live performances. If I hear a song by Rob or David that I really like, and maybe I'll go out and check them out live the next time they're around, or listen online to something else.
Do you ever think about these things?
Well, of course, yeah. I know, but I don't have much time to think about them. But one thing I'll say, the Avett Brothers, God bless them, started playing one of my songs at their live shows, and all of a sudden, we're getting a lot of downloads of this song from an album that we put out several years ago. And just from my perspective, it's been easier to make a little money at it because of the downloads. It's more accessible. We still sell CDs, but, it's unusual to sell that many nowadays.
I think from a digital standpoint, music has become really easy to record and release. From an artist's perspective, I mean, the new EP that I did, it was all self-recorded. self-mixed and that kind of thing. And it is actually online only. There's no physical copies of that one because I was just doing it as kind of a bridge between albums and since I was going on a tour and that sort of thing. But I think that the ease of recording and releasing stuff, maybe it's hard to say, but maybe in the long run will have an effect on the kind of blending of genres. Mm.
Well, you're also responsible for doing a little blending. I want to play an example of a song from your album Lost Souls and Locked Doors, which shows you taking a kind of a different direction with your music toward somebody called it roots rock.
Sure.
Is that right?
Why
classification?
musicians don't want to be labeled.
So this is a song called "Good Day to Swim," and it would just start. Thank you very much. "Good Day to Swim," and it gets unfolky right here.
Up to the old house, guess I won't be hanging around. The good Lord's calling and he's screaming in my ear. Thunder and lightning on the two-lane highway. Light up like a rocket heading where the coast is clear. There's glass in the kitchen. This ain't no postcard, but it shouldn't be so hard. Start picking myself up right off the floor. Singing when no one's around, but the street's on fire and the wells run dry. There ain't nothing left to put it out. There's glass in the kitchen in the window. Got shattered fiber flying in. I'd steal for how long on my hands and knees back to that door. Jump off, try to grow some wings. If not, it's a looking like a good day to swim. If not, it's a looking like a good day to swim.
Now, there's a Hammond organ in there. You may have noticed that. not exactly something associated with folk music. Who made that decision and why?
Let's see, how did that come about? So when I was making that album, I had been searching high and low for a pedal steel player to put on some of this stuff. And the guy I recorded with, my friend Scott Haynes up in Boone, he had a studio and it just happened to move this Hammond organ into the studio, and just so happened that he knew, and I also knew a guy from up there, Mike Runyon, who's an incredible keys player, and we got to talking and about how some of those places where a big pedal steel pad would come in, a Hammond organ might serve the same purpose, and when we put it on there, we discovered that it seemed to work a lot better than if we had used pedal steel in the first place. So.
There's something about a Hammond organ. I don't know what it is about that sound, but it just like gets you right in the gut and just fills the whole thing out, really.
It was so fun listening to him laying those parts down. It was great.
So now, how would you describe that song? Where would you put that song for a listener who hadn't bought the album? What would you say to them about that song? Where does it fit?
Well, you described it as roots rock.
No, I got that from somebody else. I didn't just make that up.
Yeah, it's fair enough. I would say there's a lot of things I stole straight from the band and Robbie Robertson, at least in terms of my guitar work and stuff like that. So if you want to call it, I mean, rock and roll as a blanket term is, you know, probably as problematic as country at this point. But in its simplest form, I guess that's what it is.
Well, speaking of rock and roll, Lavon Helms said one time, said, you got this area out in Tennessee, western Tennessee, where all these forms of music come together. What do you call it? You call it rock and
roll. Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like the Staples singers remind me of some of their stuff, too.
Is this where folk is going, where it's just got to keep collecting influences from all these different genres? Because that's what's happening in life today. That's how we live our lives today.
I think it's not only folk, it's just music in general. I think it's interesting going back to an interview I had a couple weeks ago where we were talking about how it seems like decades ago when something new came out, it got a new name, like rock and roll or metal or whatever. Mm-hmm. There was a new genre created. And it just seems like music these days is so broad and takes in from so many influences, you'd almost have each band would have its own genre name.
And is that because we're not as parochial as we used to be? I mean, we're not as, it's not local niche. Because back in the 50s, literally, record reps would come to disc jockeys, and disc jockeys would decide what was going to be a hit in that city. Mm-hmm. And what was a hit in Atlanta might not have been a hit in Charlotte and vice versa. And now, the internet, music on computer, digital, has brought the world in. Is that why?
I think there are niches, though, like where you have college radio or you have state. I'm not going to name, but there are some local stations that play a lot of local music. Mm-hmm. And I'm one of the recipient beneficiaries of that, where certain songs are known in a limited geographical area. That still goes on. It's still possible for that to go on.
Tom from the Charlotte Folk Society emailed us, and he says, they're very much alive and kicking. We're interested in music from a variety of heritages, Southern Appalachian, Irish, blues, new folk, and others. The second Friday evening of each month, we have a gathering at the Great Aunt Stella Center, and they're free, but we do pass the hat. More information and schedule. It sounds like a commercial. More information and schedules at folksociety.org. He says, when folk music is broadly defined, I will admit that sometimes even I can't define folk, but I know it when I hear it. That sounds something out like something else that we won't go into.
I read that decision.
So where do you see this going in the future for people like you who consider yourself, I guess, we haven't decided who you consider yourself as. For people who make the kind of music that you make, where do you see this going?
I see people on their back porches at barbecues playing guitars, or playing records and getting down and dancing, having a good time, and, you know, just whatever they got at hand, whether it's an old organ or a drum or whatever, people going to make music. It may not be the best, it may not be perfect, but human beings are just going to do that, and they're going to tell stories.
Yeah, and in terms of recording and releasing music, I think it's going to be really interesting to see where it goes. Like I was talking before, because of the ease of being able to release something, I kind of wonder if sometimes we won't go back to more localized scenes at some point.
Rob Nance, a singer-songwriter who's out of Durham, plays here occasionally. Play here more often, please. David Childers, who's been on the show several times, and Jeff Hain from Creative Wolfing. I want to go out with another David Childers song, another gospel tune that he did on that same album that we played from before, Serpents of Reformation. This is Woman at the Well, from David Childers here on Charlotte Talks.
Jesus. met the woman at the well. Jesus met the woman at the well. He said, woman, woman, you have five husbands. Woman, woman, you have five husbands. He said, woman, woman, the man you with is not yours. Woman, woman, the man you with is not yours. She went running, running down to the city. She went running, running down to the city. She said, people, people, that man know everything I've done. People, people, that man know everything I do. Yes, he do. Yes, he do. Know everything I do. Yes, he does. Yes, he do.